Hello, I'm Kristen Bandy with Arkansas Children's, and I'm here today talking to Dr. Stacy Jones. She's the professor of pediatrics and the director of the Arkansas Children's Food Allergy Program. And we're here because it's Food Allergy Awareness Week. So we're going to be talking a little bit about what she does here and what food allergies are. Thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about what you do here.
First of all, I get to work in a very large team of talented people from other physicians and nurses and dietitians and research coordinators. And in other words, I represent a large team of people. But we get to see children and actually adults in our research program targeting food allergies and trying to find new therapeutics, new treatments, in other words, to treat life-threatening food allergies and those that are more nuisances and life-altering, and trying to find new targets for prevention. So it's we have a large clinical program that also feeds into our research program that is funded nationally, and we're really excited about this work. We've been doing it for more than 25 years here, and really hope to continue to be pace setters in this field.
And what drew you to this field of work? What is it that fascinated you about it?
Yeah, well, allergy and immunology is a fascinating field in itself. We treat a lot of different disorders, from food allergy as a topic today, but also asthma and allergic rhinitis and hives, as well as immunodeficiency disorders. And it's a specialty that spans the lifespan from newborns through adulthood and all the way through life. So it's very enticing. In pediatrics at Arkansas Children's, we just have a lot of fun in this field. Kids are always kids at the end of the day. And so we feel like there are ways that we can contribute to help children have a better life.
You mentioned that kids are always kids. What is it that you enjoy most about working with pediatric patients?
Yeah, they forget to be patients. You know, as adults, we're always patients. We're thinking about why we're at the doctor. Kids always are children, and they play, they have fun, and they forget that they are sick or that they have something that can alter their lives. Yet they're very smart and intuitive and can learn very quickly and adaptable, and even help us as adults learn and help us change the field. So it just makes it fun every day.
What are some of the conditions that you treat for your patients?
Our group is a relatively large group, and we see a variety of disorders in pediatric patients and actually in adult patients. Part of our group practices in our adult allergy clinic at UAMS. But on the Arkansas Children's campus, we see a wide spectrum of allergic disorders, such as food allergy, our topic today, asthma, chronic hives, hay fever or allergic rhinitis type symptoms. And also the other part of our specialty that a lot of people don't know about is taking care of children and adults with immunodeficiency disorders. So people that have more susceptibility to developing infections and having complications from that. So wide range and a wide breadth of disorders that we treat.
What are the typical food allergies that you would see in a child that comes in?
So food allergies can be manifested in a lot of different ways. The most common type is what we call IgE, or immediate type of food allergies. And those most commonly in children are to milk, egg, and peanuts and tree nuts are the things that people hear about the most. But we talk about the big nine, and that's milk, egg, wheat, soy, peanuts, tree nuts, fish, shellfish, and sesame. So those are the big nine that cause about 90% of food allergies. There are more rare types of foods that can cause food allergies, but those are the big ones. Kids and adults that have those allergies will have everything from a life-threatening severe allergic reaction to very mild, maybe even mild rashes or GI or types of symptoms that cause abdominal pain or vomiting.
What's something about food allergies that not a lot of people would know?
Food allergies, because of the spectrum, the most common, as I mentioned, are the immediate type reactions where you eat a food and you have symptoms that go with that. But there are also problems where children have delayed reactions, where maybe there's a disorder called FPIES, or food protein induced enterocolitis syndrome. It's a lot of words, but we call it FPIES. And those children don't really ever have skin rashes. They have repetitive vomiting after drinking a formula, for instance, and show up in the emergency room because of having a lot of very abrupt symptoms, but that is delayed for several hours. So sometimes those are a little bit harder to pin on, mm-hmm. on a particular food. There are even types of food allergies where you just see hives alone, or maybe just vomiting alone, or isolated symptoms. So it can be a real spectrum of diseases.
As a new mom, my kid would get a rash or something out of nowhere, and it would always be a panic of, what have they eaten recently that was new, and is that the cause? If it had been more than a few hours, more than 24 hours, it was almost always in my brain, it's not the food. Mm-hmm. How long is a delayed reaction? How long is the length of time before it just can't possibly be that food anymore? Is there even a standard?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. And there is a standard. There are kind of directives that we live under. So for those immediate type reactions, we think of having a food and having symptoms temporally related to that food within a 2-hour period. Most kids that have the immediate type of food allergy are going to react within 30 minutes to an hour, but it can be delayed up to 2 hours. The other types of disorders may be as late as 4 to 6 hours. Commonly, we have new moms in particular, they get very worried because they see hives the next mm-hmm. day, and they give their child maybe peanut or strawberries the day before. That's probably not related.
Okay. I've been there.
Yeah.
And I have gone through the list of, do we get any laundry detergent?
Right.
Do we have any food?
Right. Right.
It's a panic.
And it drives you crazy because you so want to protect your child. Mm-hmm. And that's when it's really helpful. The tools that we give people are to say, write it down. Mm-hmm. Think about what they ate, think about all those things, but write it down and get the timeline, and then talk to your doctor. Because a lot of those things, you can get reassurances just by having that discussion and not absorbing it all yourself as a new mom or as a new dad.
New parents in general are stressed out.
Right.
So,
right.
You
right.
know,
right.
anytime your child turns right. red anywhere, it's a panic. Right.
But children do turn red. They do have rashes. Mm-hmm. And hives and things that are not related to food.
They don't put that in the manual.
They don't tell you
they're going to just rash up every once in a while.
Right. Yeah. And it's okay.
Right.
And they're not probably going to do it
again. Don't call the ER.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's a hard balance.
Yeah, it is a hard balance. So are food allergies always present at birth? Do they develop? How does that work? And I'm sure there's no standard answer on that.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's an intuitive question, and I wish I had all the answers.
Right.
I think we'll probably talk toward the end about some of the new studies that we've got going on, so we'll circle back to the whys and the hows. We think of food allergy as along the atopic march or the allergic march, and children that develop allergies often will start off with some eczema or atopic dermatitis, skin rash that is chronic and begins in infancy or early infancy. Mm-hmm. And that pairs often around the same time, or food allergy will come just after that. And then we go on in a little bit older children in early school age years, mm-hmm. they'll have some asthma or allergic rhinitis, hay fever types of symptoms. And that's how this march goes. So children aren't born with that food allergy, but they are often, we think, have a predisposition based on the fact that maybe they were born into a family that has a lot of allergies or asthma, or maybe even food allergy. So that they're they inherit that propensity or that genetic background to develop allergies. But why it happens in some kids and not in others, jury's still out. And that's a lot of the work we're doing right now.
Right. Yeah. Well, that leads to my next question. Why does a child suddenly develop a food allergy? They've been eating the same thing for years and suddenly they're allergic to it. Why does that happen?
I don't know. You're going to need to come work with us because
I would love to just be
really,
a fly on the wall.
Yeah, you've got some intuitive questions. Those are the questions that we're really asking. We don't know, again, why a child in the same family, for instance, siblings, one will have allergies and one won't, and they come from the same parents and the same background. We know that all of those things play a role. We also know that early introduction of foods into the diet will often prevent that food allergy. So those are all things that we're looking at, considering, working with guidelines developers and expert panels that many of us are on to get at those questions.
My 7-year-old son has a habit of deciding all of a sudden he doesn't like a food that he's been eating his entire life. Maybe it's the same gene that causes that, if you want to write that down.
Okay, that's it.
Yeah. She told me I could come work with her.
So. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, you know, you bring up an interesting point because one of the things that we really see, I saw it twice in clinic yesterday, is that there will be children that tolerate your 7-year-old son, you know, that consume all of the big 9 that we talked about. And then they start having another problem, and maybe someone draws lab that says, oh, there's a positive test here to peanut, for instance, and peanut is taken out of the diet, and then that child becomes allergic to that. So one of the messages that we really want to feel strongly about is if a child is tolerating it, whatever that it is, whatever that food is, that it stay in their diet, because that is something that we know is helpful and helps that immune system say, hey, this is safe. I don't have to react and have a problem. How you get the 7-year-old to keep doing it is sometimes the trick, right?
So it seems like we're doing the opposite of what we should be doing. If you say my son's allergic to peanuts, right? Mm-hmm. From a test, right? He's not had any reactions. Is that what you mean? It just kind of showed up on
so
a
that's
test.
Not allergic.
And so
that's
you
called
immediately
sensitized. Yeah.
Think, pull it away.
Right.
But doing that is making it worse.
Well, because that
causes the allergy.
Because that allergy profile is potentially there. We call it sensitization when it's just a test. If that child, your 7-year-old son, is eating peanut and he has a positive test and has no problems, we want it to stay in the diet, because you take the food out and all of a sudden the problem can rise and the immune system may develop its armies and on the next exposure say, oh, you know, this is now bad for me.
So I'm assuming do all this under the supervision of a pediatrician, your doctor, your allergist?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Don't try it at home,
but also be aware and ask questions to your pediatrician to say, you know, why aren't we doing the test? We have the foods in the diet and we're doing just great.
Yeah.
So, you know, being able to, we need more and more awareness of families and providers that are out doing these tests too, about how to interpret them. And what we love is when they call and say, hey, I've got this, what do I do?
Yeah.
That's an even
yeah, let us
better,
help you.
Let us help
let
you.
Let us join in this fight against these allergies.
Yeah.
Boy, it is a life alterer.
Yes.
When you find out that your kid or you yourself are allergic to something, you have to eliminate it from your diet and be super careful all the time. That's a hard thing to take care of all the time.
It is a hard thing to take care of. And it is, you're right, we call it life-threatening. Not all food allergies are life-threatening, but they are life-altering.
Right.
Most people describe, you know, I don't think about my everyday. If you are a child or an adult, or you have a child with, you're a parent of a child with food allergy, the world all of a sudden feels a little bit like landmines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is out there? What is my child going to get a hold of? That is life altering every day for that family.
So we discussed what causes a food allergy to appear suddenly. What are the first symptoms that appear when you do have a food allergy?
Yeah, that's another hard question.
It's probably different for everybody.
There you go. Yeah. It's different.
I answered it for.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Let's go into the teasing. You know, a lot of kids, as a matter of fact, the numbers are 80% of people with a food allergy will have a rash, mm-hmm. Or hives, itching, flushing of their skin. But that means 20% of people don't. And so that's one thing that is hard to recognize sometimes when that rash or that skin itching doesn't happen. So it can be as simple as a rash that is not simple for a child or a parent, clearly. Or the first reaction might be a severe allergic reaction where that individual has trouble breathing or has throat tightness and head-to-toe rash and vomiting and the whole spectrum. And that's where it becomes very scary. And the difference might be that the child that has a rash and has hives may need to be treated at home and then followed up with their doctor, where the more severe reaction needs to get into the emergency room quickly for treatment.
As a new parent who tended to panic, mm-hmm. how do you tell the difference between that reaction that you can kind of watch and see and the reaction that's like, get to the ER right the second?
And, you know, that's a hard one. And whether it's a first reaction or a child or an adult with known food allergy or a teenager with known food allergy, there are signs and symptoms that we don't play around with. So again, a minor rash, we're going to say slow down, watch, give some antihistamines and see how things are going. Once it starts progressing or once we have symptoms like throat tightness or wheezing or difficulty breathing or repetitive vomiting, that is the child, adolescent, adult that needs to get emergency care. Hopefully, if that person already has food allergy, they have injectable epinephrine in the form of, there are many different devices now, EpiPens, IVQs, and they would take that, give themselves that injection, call an ambulance and get into the hospital.
Yeah. I skipped ahead a little bit, but this may be naive, but I always kind of assumed with a food allergy that the rash would appear, you know, around the mouth where you ate the mm-hmm. food, but that's not the case. It sometimes can be.
And often there's no rash on the face, wow. Unless there's contact, you know, a young child.
Because that's a different allergy, right? The contact allergy.
It is. And there are younger children that are sloppier eaters, yeah. Or, you know, maybe when your kids are busy and they're teenagers, I don't know, but, you know, may have more of that rash around their, mm-hmm. their mouth. But that's less common, actually, and you can have distant reactions from the place of ingestion in the mouth or contact that really indicate that the food allergy is progressing very quickly. One thing really to point out, Kristen, is how rapidly things can change. Yeah. So we talk about a minor symptom like a rash, but that rash can progress very quickly to more severe reaction in a matter of minutes. So being attentive, especially if we know that patient has food allergy, being attentive to signs and symptoms. And one of the things we haven't talked about is a food allergy allergic plan or anaphylaxis plan. And that's a detailed written plan as to which symptoms require very quick action and seeking emergency attention. And that's something we recommend for everyone to have. I kind of stole your topic, a little bit, moving away.
Into topics I didn't know I wanted to explore. So
yeah. I think those are all important for families, though. What are you looking for right. when you don't have a diagnosis? And then what do you do when you do have a diagnosis? And what you should expect from your provider, either your primary care provider or your allergy provider, and you should expect very clear directives on how to treat your symptoms.
I think the scariest thing for me is not having any food allergies. My husband doesn't have any, and so it's not something you're aware of.
Mm-hmm.
in your, you know, bucket of things that might be going wrong. So I feel like that's why Food Allergy Awareness Week is so important, making it aware to people like me that it just doesn't cross our brain that this is what's going on. They might be allergic to food.
Right.
Get this plan that we'll put in the comments so that you can have it at home and just be more aware that that's a thing that can happen even if nobody has food allergies in your family.
Right. You know, the flip side is also important to recognize. 30% of people living in the United States believe they have a food allergy. But the reality is, in children, it's up to about 6 to 8%.
Oh, really?
And in adults, it's about 2%. So true food allergies are typically not subtle and not something that most people have to be on the lookout for all the time. So what we want to do is calm the fear factor and say, be aware, mm-hmm. be attentive, but don't be paranoid and don't look for everything and have really great communication with your provider, your primary care physician or advanced practice nurse, and then get in to see an allergy provider when that is important to tease through the details.
Why should a parent consult a pediatric allergist or immunologist versus one who typically deals with adults? Why? What's the difference? What makes it so important to niche down?
You know, I think the most important thing is to have a specialist in allergy, and in particular food allergy, that understands food allergy, not, you know, allergist or like any other type of physician. They have different specialty areas. So the main thing is to have someone that really understands food allergy and the nuances. We believe in pediatric allergy that there are differences in children compared to adults. So children are not little adults. And the nuances of that atopic march or that allergic mm-hmm. march that we talked about, and how allergies are manifested, whether it's asthma or food allergies in children, looks very different. So having someone that has experience in with children and teens to know how those diseases change over time, I think is really important, and something that I think for here, our group adds a lot to the field and to the state. We also have really great colleagues out in that are our affiliates and our partners out in the community that do a wonderful job too. And we really need everyone on board taking care of these.
So children are not little adults is our favorite saying mm-hmm. around here. What are some of the ways that food allergies would present in a child that would be different from an adult? You said you have to, you know, be able to tell.
Yeah, well, in children, well, I'll reverse it. In adults, it is uncommon to have new allergies, mm-hmm. Not impossible. And certainly there are adults that haven't eaten a food for most of their life and have a food that they have problems with. But typically the lifelong food allergens are peanuts, tree nuts, fish, shellfish, and sesame. Most of the more common childhood allergens like milk and soy mm-hmm. and egg and wheat, most kids will outgrow by the time they're teenagers, and only about 10 to 15% of people will actually retain those into adulthood. So those are just nuances. Mm-hmm. A lot of adults believe they have a food allergy when they don't. They have an intolerance. So it looks different. The story is often different and hard and somewhat difficult to tease through. So the manifestations aren't necessarily different, but the nuances of getting to the right diagnosis are often different.
Gotcha. What would the difference between an allergy and an intolerance be? Is that?
So an intolerance often has to do with the type of food, or a great example is that there will be people that think they are milk allergic when actually they're lactose intolerant. So they can consume a lactose-free milk, but a milk allergic person is still going to have trouble with that lactose-free because it's about the protein in the milk. So that's an example of an intolerance that is often a threshold related thing rather than actually needing to get rid of the entire food group in their diet.
That makes sense. Thank you. That really makes sense. I can't have you here with me and not talk about the groundbreaking peanut allergy clinical trial that we had in the news recently. Can mm-hmm. you tell me about that?
Yeah, I think it's the impact trial you're talking
yes.
about. We have been doing work in oral immunotherapy that's taking an allergen powder and treating patients with that allergy to provide them protection and even in some instances to be able to, we hope, to help them outgrow that allergy. We've been doing that here for about 20 years and helped pioneer that. The real relevance of the impact trial was that it took 5 centers around the country, and we did that work in 1 to 3 year olds. And it was a huge commitment from the families. We had 143 children across these 5 centers, and they were treated in a blinded fashion for 2.5 years with a therapy versus placebo. In other words, they had oat powder versus peanut to treat their peanut allergy. And what we've learned is that there is a very sweet spot or window of opportunity early in a child's life before that atopic march or that allergic march happens, that if we can get the food in and treat that peanut allergy early, that we have a chance of helping them outgrow that allergy. So that was only in 143 children, and so there's more work that is being done. But we've now seen this in, we have another study that's coming out very soon in publication that the same thing can happen with the peanut patch and with drops that go under the tongue. It's called sublingual. So we know that there is this period of time in very young children before that allergy gets locked in, we think, that we can intervene early and help them not have this sustained allergic potential.
So prevention, you're preventing the allergy from fully forming and then becoming something that they're allergic to lifelong?
Well, yeah, I think it's more, yes, in a way, we're intervening because they already have, in this circumstance, they've already had food allergic reactions. And so they definitely, those children were all very, very peanut allergic. In fact, they reacted to about a tenth of a peanut. By the time we finished the study, the ones that did well could be off of the peanut therapy for 6 months and consume over 16 peanuts. And we could put that into their diet on a regular basis. And we're in the process of following those kids up after about 5 years to see how they're doing. And so that's one aspect, being able to try to unlock that allergy, so to speak, in those really young kids. We know this works in older kids, but often not to help them outgrow it. So we're hoping that this is the first real big trial that shows that we can move forward in this direction in young children down the road.
When this trial came out, and the news release, I was just here. I hadn't been here very long, and I knew that this was incredibly impactful. How is this going to impact child safety worldwide?
You know, I think one of the things about this trial and others that are on the Hills is that it provides really strong protection from children at risk of anaphylaxis or severe allergic reactions due mm-hmm. to peanut allergy. I think it's going to help pave the way for other trials. As a matter of fact, we think now about age in clinical trials related to food allergy when we didn't necessarily think about that. So I think it is changing the way we think about when to intervene and how to keep those children safe. It is not 100% ready for prime time yet, but we're working on the details of what that looks like. These children are always treated, and I mentioned at the beginning of our segment that these are big teams that do the food allergy research. So we need to figure out now how to get this into the real world and to provide this therapy for families or something like that. But I think it changes the face of how we look at treatment protocols down the road.
Knowing that this came from Arkansas Children's makes me incredibly proud, and I didn't even do anything. So I cannot even imagine how proud something like this makes you. Can you tell me how it felt for this to be published?
Yeah, it's incredible, and it's really, as I mentioned, 25 years of work that this team that I started off talking about. I get to do this all the time, or frequently. I get to report on the science that we've been doing or the clinical trials. But it really has to do with our team. And most importantly, it has to do with the willing families, mm-hmm. parents, and children, and teenagers, and adults that do these studies. Without them, we would make no progress. There would be no new footprint. I'm incredibly proud of Arkansas Children's and grateful to Arkansas Children's leadership and the Research Institute and our teams for supporting this work, because it's so important. We really have a national seat at the table, and we always have for this work. And I think what that means is that we can bring new studies early on, before the FDA is even considering them necessarily as approval. And we can give our families and our children and adults all the way through adulthood the opportunity to get a hold of these new therapies early on. So that's super exciting, and I am very, very proud.
So you mentioned other studies. Tell me what other studies are being worked on right now that you're excited about? What can we expect to see make the national news sometime soon?
We are working on a variety of things. We have about 15 or 20 different clinical trials and new ones coming. Everything from new versions of patch studies where a child puts on a patch to desensitize or to protect from their allergy, to we have a new tablet that goes under the tongue, and we have some injectable therapies that are more like vaccines, or there's one called a peptide therapy that's getting ready to start, and that has so far a tremendous safety profile. Because in the other things we talked about, we are using the allergen to treat, and we'd love to get away from that. Mm-hmm. So there's just a wealth of new therapies, we call them biologics, where we're impacting the immune pathways that cause the allergies. So we're really impacting their whole allergic profile. And I would say we have 7 or 8 different types of therapies going on right now in about 15, 16 trials.
Lots of amazing things going on.
Yeah, and we love having families call us about this. We love having adults. The other really thing that we're grateful to Arkansas Children's and the teams here is that we are allowed to bring adults into our facility to provide these therapies for them, because sometimes new therapies actually start in adults, mm-hmm. Especially ones that really have not ever been given in food allergy. And we want to start with people that can be very clear to us about what's going on with them.
Incredible.
So it's nice.
So we've talked a lot about food allergies and how to treat them and what to do when they mm-hmm. happen. Let's talk a little bit about prevention. Is that a possibility?
There's some really good information that it is. So we have national guidelines that came out in 2017 that we're still working to implement on that really indicate from a big study that was done that if we can get, for instance, peanut into an infant's diet in the first 4 to 6 months, that it will prevent them from developing peanut allergy. And that's a huge fact. The study that was done, it was about an 80-fold difference in the number of children that developed peanut allergy versus the ones that did not. So that is something that we would really like to continue to have pediatricians and family doctors offer and put as part of their well-child visits, to go ahead and begin to get these foods in. More intuitive another intuitive question that you alluded to is, what can we do? Is there something, a therapy, for instance, that we can do? And we have a really first time ever cool study called the Sunbeam Trial, and it is, or the Sunbeam Study, and it's a birth cohort study in 12 centers around the country. And we are in the process of enrolling 2,500 mothers and babies.
Wow.
And their fathers. And we'll be following those babies initially for 3 years and probably in much longer. This is a large study funded by the NIH, and it's going to gather information, including genetic information and environmental information and information about what you feed your child and how you raise that child. And at the end of that, we hope we'll find targets that we can actually use to prevent food allergy and eczema down the road. So it's a data gathering study right now, but it is the biggest of its kind. It's never been done in food allergy. And so down the road, I think we're going to see some real ways that we know what caused food allergy and how to intervene early and prevent that.
That's amazing. I would imagine somebody living with a food allergy as an adult never thought that this type of thing was possible. So
right.
I feel like we're seeing the future a little bit with studies like
these. I think it is. It's very futuristic. I love
it
that.
It feels like.
Yeah. The other thing for your audience is many of these trials we're still enrolling for, and we love to hear from people. We enroll moms in during their pregnancy, at any point in their pregnancy, and we're partnering with UAMS on this, and Dr. Nirvana Manning and her group in OB, and it's been just a lot of fun to see these moms and then their newborn babies, and now we have some that are 2 and 2.5. So again, gets at the fun of pediatrics.
Yeah, that's awesome. You have provided so much information. I feel like the Research Institute and the studies that go on here were something that I knew nothing about before I started working here. And I think it's really important that everybody knows about them. Thank you so much for joining us. I've got one more question that I didn't prep you for. I'm going to put you on the spot. What do you love most about your job?
Wow. Most.
What's your favorite thing? What's your
most would be being a pediatrician and seeing children every day. Again, I have an incredible team, so that is phenomenally rewarding. I have a family that allows me to do this every day, and I get to see kids, and I get to watch them grow up now from little babies that we have in a trial called the Sunbeam Trial, and watch them grow up over time and even become adults. And so that is the most rewarding thing, is interfacing with the kids. And no matter what the topic is, again, they forget to be patients. They forget that they have food allergy or asthma, and they're just kids. So it makes it fun.
And they usually come with jokes and really fun
That's
stories.
Right.
So
That's
it's always
right.
great. Well, Dr. Stacey Jones, thank you so much for joining us today. I know I learned a lot. We will put anything we discussed, we'll link those in the comments for you, and have a great day.